Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study, and thank you for joining us today with the topic of Paul's conversion. And our moderator today is Thomas from New York. So, Thomas, take it away.
Welcome, everybody. So we'll start out with a poem. That I might be more like intrepid Paul, whose life exposed the falsity of sense. Forsaking all for Christ, he yet had all. Dishonored often, he knew no offense. He sang in praise when bound by bodily woes, until his fetters fell aside at length. Undaunted, faced a multitude of foes, and fought the fight of faith in Christ's own strength. Help me, dear God, to live above earth's lies, as the apostle to the Gentiles did. Ascribe to good all power, and realize my very life with Christ in God is hid. Now, this is poem number 298 from the book Daily Angels by Max Dunaway.
Well, this is a beautiful description in a very few words of Paul. I looked up intrepid, not trembling or shaking with fear, fearless, brave, undaunted. And he certainly was that. And I know it's just a beautiful description of him. He was absolutely a wonderful example of fearless obedience to God. And it gave him 35 years of being able to preach the gospel because of his character and strength and trust in God.
Yeah, and
thank you.
And this is a pure righteous prayer, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
To be more like Paul. Mm-hmm.
We all be like him.
We all respect for Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in miscellaneous writings, and you probably all are familiar with this, but I know Mrs. Evans would point it out to us on page 360. Great only is good because fashioned divinely were those unpretentious yet colossal characters, Paul and Jesus. Theirs were modes of mind cast in the molds of Christian science. Paul's, by the supremely natural transforming power of truth. And the character of Jesus, by his original scientific sonship with God. Philosophy never has produced, nor can it reproduce, these stars of the first magnitude, fixed stars in the heavens of soul. When shall earth be crowned with the true knowledge of Christ? So it's quite a tribute. And she's mentioning Paul there with Jesus. So yeah, she had great love and respect for the Apostle Paul. When you think of how much the New Testament was written by him.
Yeah.
He's mentioned as second to Jesus for spreading Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There's a lot in
wonderful. Oh, go on.
Okay, thank you. There's a lot in here for self-examination. Dishonored often, he knew no offense. How likely is it for people when they are dishonored to strike back and try to silence the dishonoring with force or something like that, other than the Christly method?
Yeah, and to be offended, get your nose out of joint.
And we know what he did from Acts. You know, he was up in front of King Agrippa defending what he stood for, and he did it without using any kind of force, physical, and something like that. And here's another one. He sang in praise when bound by bodily woes. Well, I've never been in the straits that he's been in, But many times I found myself complaining, and yet look where he was, and what did he do? He sang praise. So for me, it gives me a great occasion for self-examination.
Thank you.
I think the closer we walk with God, the closer we are awake, or the more we are awake to this truth, the more we are able to do a little bit of what he did.
Well, yeah, and the amazing thing to me, and haven't had a lot of time as you all have with the Bible, and that's one of the reasons I love these Bible studies. I'm still looking for insight into some of that. So I don't know much about this story, but I know that, you know, from the readings that Paul was persecuting the Christians and killing and so forth. And the amazing thing to me is that when he opened his thought to God and obeyed, God is the one that washed away all of that past for him so that he was able to go on and do great things in the present. And that's just the amazing thing to me with forgiveness and how you can forgive yourself for as long as you can put them aside as nothing and obey God. Amazing story.
May I piggyback on that? Because you're so right on. And there's an article on our website by Stoltz. I'm going to find her first name, sorry. But they tell in here that he had no condemnation, and he was able to do that, and he left all behind. And that gave the power from God to proceed with his life is spectacular.
It is.
It's called Paul's Demonstration by Sophie Stoltz.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.
There are some wonderful shows. I love to watch history, especially about the Bible times, and just for anybody's information, there are so many wonderful programs about Paul and his missionary work, and just beautiful, beautiful things about it. It's just, I watch them over and over. There's so many wonderful things about Paul and that time on the internet. It's one of the wonderful things about the internet. We can watch these things, and very informative.
Are they on, what are they on, Prime? Or
no, I've been watching most of them on Prime.
On Prime?
Yeah, they're Prime, mm-hmm. Yes. The Apostle Paul.
One, actually. No, there's one I watch particularly on his conversion from, you know, on the way to Damascus. It's quite impressive.
And that's on Prime?
On the way to Damascus.
Yes.
On the way to Damascus? Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's another one called Salem Now, and it has some good ones on the Bible and Revelation and all those type. And there's also a book that I just recently read called Sons of Encouragement, and it's by Francine Rivers, and it's about several of the Bible heroes, male Bible heroes, Aaron and Caleb and Jonathan, Amos and Silas. And Silas was a scribe for Paul. And he has this short paragraph I'd like to share that I just loved, connected to the Bible thing that we're doing today, the Bible study we're doing today. And it's Silas expressing his memory toward Paul after Paul had been martyred. And it says how Silas missed talking with Paul about the word of the Lord. He missed Paul's passion, his dedication, his perseverance. He had been honored to watch Paul grow more humble over time and had seen him near the end so filled with love and compassion that it spilled from him as it had from Christ's. Paul's touch healed many. His words rang with truth. God, in his infinite wisdom, had chosen an enemy and made him into a most intimate friend.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it reminded me of Mrs. Eddy's writing on our enemies, where she prays to make them your friend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, there is hope for all of us, isn't there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is wonderful that we have these great things to watch, that we don't have to watch all the garbage that can be on that have these wonderful things to fill our thoughts and minds with. And I read somewhere that a lot of what motivated Paul throughout his career was the words of Stephen, where he, you know, forgave and the way he so beautifully said it, that's what struck him so much that it flipped him over, converted him entirely. That's why you never know what word you might do or what your example might do to really put someone on the right path. And you might never know in this human experience what you've done for another. And it doesn't really matter, but don't ever stop doing it.
Well, it was because of Paul's understanding. I mean, he lived the grace. He said he lived the grace of God. He lived the forgiveness. He lived it. He's experienced. So that's why he was so fearless in teaching it, because of his own experience, he could teach it from the bottom of his heart. And unlike the apostles who saw Jesus's works, Paul never did, and yet he was just so strong in his, he knew that what had happened to him was divine. It was of no human teaching. It was all divine. He gave it all to God. And you just could not move him because of his own experience of forgiveness and love. He could teach it because he experienced it. It's,
Thank you. And that's why we always have to let others have their own experiences so they come back with a passion. I mean, we talked about that with the prophet. The brother, you know, just stayed in the house and didn't have any compassion, while the one at the house did. And I read too, and it's so true, where Paul, he knew what the Jews, all the Pharisees and all those, what they were thinking. Mm-hmm. So therefore he knew how to get to them in a way.
He did.
He was about to become one.
It's
about to become a rabbi, in fact.
Yes.
One of the best.
What is the...
Someone donated it to us. It's called Paul by Edgar Godspeed. Mm-hmm. And it reads like a novel, but it's beautifully researched on Paul.
Oh, nice.
And they talked about how he went to speak to the crowd. And first he calmed them because the way he talked. But then he started to speak directly to them about, you know, the beliefs that they held, and he challenged it and sent them right over.
Yes.
And they referred to him as a statesman. And
yes.
I thought that was interesting. And so that probably really got to them. And he was trying to tell them more that, look, I was there and I had those beliefs, but now I have this new, but they didn't want to hear.
Yeah, well, again, you never know. Sometimes it takes a while. Even those people that might reject you, they can be listening. You've planted seeds. You never know.
Yeah, and he knew that. That's right.
He knew that, yeah.
And they're also finding the limitation of their current beliefs.
Right, right.
That requires them their own life.
Speaking of that, in the book Sons of Encouragement, there's a place where Silas and Paul, they strike out to go on one of their missions out, you know, toward the churches that had been established. And while they go out, they get robbed within a few days of leaving where they were. And Paul, he works to present the message of salvation to the robbers while they're holding a knife to his throat. And
It's really, you know, kind of incredible to think of it, you know, that you could do something like that. But Silas described him as so fierce and so committed and single-minded that he intimidated other people that had to travel with him, because he was a single-minded warrior before he became a single-minded warrior for Christ. And he was a fierce personality in some ways.
Thank you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful to this Bible study because it gave me an even deeper understanding of.
Absolutely. These Bible studies are so important.
Another thing that just came to thought in these programs that I was watching about Paul, it gives you some idea of the territory and the area, the environment of where he was walking. And I mean, not only did he have to face people that were, you know, unbelievers, but the animals, the wildness, he was walking in wild areas where there was just all kinds of, he talks, you know, the what he had to face just in the nature in the wild air was incredible. And yet he was undaunted by even that, and robbers, like it was just mentioned. But it was no walk on the streets like we have. It was dangerous area that he was walking around in. And even that, he was able to just, you know, face those fears too. Oh, wow, I never even thought about that until these programs.
Yeah, thank
you. And he grew up in the city too.
Yeah, well, yeah. And what was that show? We watched a show about someone who walking through Turkey. And
oh, yeah, that Professor Mark Fairchild thing where he went all around. I think we watched a couple of them, but that was one of them.
Yeah.
That really impressed on me, the miles that he repeatedly walked all around there.
Yes. Yeah, it's so interesting to see that terrain and everything.
But also it was the Roman roads also that helped him move around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, so speaking of roads, you know the street named Straight is still there in Damascus. So kind of interesting if people want to look it up, but it's kind of fascinating.
Did you go there, Tom?
No, I've never been to Syria.
Huh.
So our topic, as Mary said, was Paul's conversion. And then I know Linda mentioned the book Paul by Edgar Goodspeed. Just want to know that the catalog we're developing, we've got a link to that. So you can actually read that book online. So we have a number of readings, which I won't go through, but hopefully people have gotten through them. And I think one of the most fascinating things is Paul's background. So that's our first question. What was Paul's background before his conversion?
Well, in Acts 22, verse 3 is very concise about that. It says, "I am verily a man which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, yet brought up in this city," meaning Jerusalem, "at the feet of Gamaliel." He was a very famous and respected teacher of Jewish law. "And at the feet of Gamaliel, and taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and was zealous toward God, as ye all are today." And he was speaking to, I think, fellow Pharisees. And he went on, but I thought that was really interesting that he had made sure everybody knew he was a citizen of Rome and had come to, and a Jew, and came to Jerusalem and studied under a famous teacher, so that he had all the credentials and so forth, and very zealous about, you know, that before his conversion. And I just And then they, you know, and also the part about what in the first one of the other readings in Acts about being at St. Stephen's, where he was killed, and they went on about that. They mentioned his name actually in the Bible at that point. But I just thought that was really interesting that he was had been all those things that they had been and was converted, and he was trying to tell them that this was actually the way, not what he had been in the past. So thank you for that question.
I saw something there that I haven't seen before, and that was Paul was of the tribe of Benjamin, and Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin, meaning King Saul. And so he was named after the pride of Benjamin, which was King Saul. When he let go of his name, Saul, he was letting go of all that tribal history, because there was angst between the tribe of Benjamin and the tribe of Judah.
Well,
that is interesting. Yeah. I wondered about the name Saul.
Yeah, Saul means great man in Hebrew, and Paul means small man or humble.
Mm-hmm.
I have something. Yeah, he was one of Gamaliel's top students. He was also in his heart very zealous. I mean, he thought that the organization and the rules that they abided by were given by God, directed by God, and he was a great defender of rules and the organization that he felt was the highest, you know, that God had put on earth. And he was honest about it. And he genuinely felt that this new thing called Christianity, I'm not sure if it was called Christianity at the time.
It was called the way.
It was called, yeah. Just referred to it as, you know, that way.
Okay.
He really felt that was a subversion of the truth. That was a mesmerism, if you will, that it was trying to deceive people away from the truth. And that is why he attacked so zealously.
And that's also what was between Benjamin and the tribe of Benjamin and the tribe of Judah, because the tribe of Benjamin believed that King Saul and his offspring should have been king, never David, who switched over to the tribe of Judah. And interestingly, Jesus Christ was from the tribe of Judah. And so he was even on some level admitting that Christ was king and the rightful ruler and, you know, savior of the world.
So it was mentioned that Gamaliel was a teacher of Paul, and this is actually very significant, because Gamaliel's grandfather was Hillel the Elder, who is very famous in Judaism. So we can infer from that Paul had the finest training in Judaism that is possible.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and then later, what did he say about it all?
All done.
Yeah, done.
All done. Yes.
To the Christ. Not at all.
And one thing that we had emphasized here was, as Gary mentioned, his honesty, because he had an honest conviction about what he did. And when a person has an honest conviction and is honest, not hiding anything, they can be used by God. Only when people are masking and covering up and deceitful, because then what they forfeit divine help, don't they? Dishonesty is human weakness, mm-hmm. which forfeits divine help. And during the law case years, Mrs. Evans would tell us that the ones that were the most difficult, I guess to say, who were, if you want to say, against us, were those with an honest conviction, who honestly felt we were wrong. And you can see why, because when someone honestly thinks you're wrong, you've got to unwind that snarl, especially if you know by in the sight of God you are right. So it's something to be aware of.
Well, when someone when someone is honestly convinced that Christian Science is wrong, mm-hmm. or that Christianity is wrong, they need a really rude awakening. They need a dramatic event to show them that their conviction is on the wrong side.
And that is definitely what Saul experienced. You know, I mean, my gosh, he was blinded for 3 days. He couldn't even eat. He had all this time to think about things. And also, the Christ was with him. And we have heard that there are many people that have these kind of conversions in prisons and other places. God is speaking everywhere in wondrous ways.
It's amazing.
You know, in the last
3 days, he had a complete turnaround.
Yes.
Well,
that's amazing.
3 days he was empty.
Yeah, he was empty.
He was, and he was ready for the turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the 2 weeks that he spent with the disciples that he actually got the right kind of teaching about who and what Jesus really was. And that was what it made his conversion. But he had 3 days to empty his thought of all the past, of what he had been taught that was wrong.
Yeah, pond and purpose was operating.
Pouring the new wine.
Yes. I read this. I just thought it was interesting. A man of moderate stature with crisp hair, crooked legs, blue eyes, large knit brows, and a long nose, at times looking like a man and at times looking like an angel. And then this Tarsus was one of the great cities of the ancient world with an excellent harbor and a strategic placement of trade routes. It was especially known as a university city, being one of the three great educational cities of the Mediterranean world. Some thinking it even surpassed those of Athens and Alexandria. So he grew up in an area where, you know, people thought they knew a lot, even though they didn't know Christ. So therefore they didn't know much.
In the lesson this week, you know, we had Saul's conversion, and one of the things that really stood out to me was the word confounded, where it says that he increased in strength and confounded the Jews, That was the word. And I looked up the word confounded, and it's kind of like what Gary just mentioned. It's like mentally shocked or frozen. It's like at zero or something. And it reminded me of Mrs. Eddy when she talks about how there's a positive right and a negative wrong. It kind of like, I all of a sudden had this vision of it being like a padlock or something, that there's something in that word confounded, where it's like you're trying to work a padlock, and it's, you know, a little to the right and a little to the left and a little to the right, and all of a sudden click, 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 and it's open. like that shock kind of thing.
Thank you. Kiri has sent me an interesting article called Stephen and Saul by Spurgeon. And in that article, he compared Stephen with Saul. I mean, they were both so dedicated to their causes, but totally different causes. And it's interesting that they met and that Saul was converted the way he was. But it's an interesting article. I can't read it all to you, but it says, Stephen and Saul were unlike. They were alike in many ways, and then they were unlike in many ways. But they were alike in this sense, that they were both sincere and both thoroughgoing in their sincerity. God can use that kind of...
So maybe we move on to the next question, number two. What can we learn from the courage of Ananias?
Well, I found a little commentary by Matthew Henry on the Acts 9:10-22. Anyway, it's about Ananias. If I can, it's not that long, very short. It says, a good work was begun in Saul when he was brought to Christ's feet with those words, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And never did Christ leave any who were brought to that. Behold, the proud Pharisee, the unmerciful oppressor, the daring blasphemer prayeth. And thus it is even now, and with the proud infidel, or the abandoned sinner. What happy tidings are these to all who understand the nature and power of prayer, of such prayer as the humbled sinner presents for the blessings of free salvation. Now he began to pray after another manner than he had done before. He said his prayers, now he prayed them. Regenerating grace sets people on praying. You may as well find a living man without breath as a living Christian without prayer. Yet even eminent disciples like Ananias sometimes stagger at the commands of the Lord. But it is the Lord's glory to surpass our scanty expectations and show that those are vessels of his mercy, whom we are apt to consider as objects of his vengeance. The teaching of the Holy Spirit takes away the scales of ignorance and pride from the understanding. Then the sinner becomes a new creature and endeavors to recommend the anointed Savior, the Son of God, to his former companions. So Ananias was the one that God chose to baptize him and it's understandable that Ananias, you know, I don't even want to get near this guy. He kills Christians or kills, you know, those of the following in the way. But his obedience was what allowed Saul then become Paul and do the great works. But Ananias had to have the courage and the faith in God to obey. If you're sure this is what I'm supposed to do, but he, you know, rightly feared for his own life to go to Saul.
Yes, I read in there. He was a, you know, just, we don't know much about him. He was a certain disciple. So he's kind of, it brought out sort of your average Joe, you know, and but God chose him to do this too, because he was obedient. His had a perfect response. Here I am, Lord. And you know, when with Paul Damascus, who are you, Lord? And Lord, what do you want me to do? Those are the right questions to ask. And I know I mentioned this once before, but in one of the modern versions of the Bible, they didn't have this. They didn't have those questions in there, which was terrible. I mean, it was a big part of this whole thing, that humility, first to ask who he was and then what would you have me do, as did Ananias. Here I am, Lord, giving him whole self over to God. And it made, this commentary made another point too, that because Paul couldn't see, he said that he called him brother, and he laid his hands on him. And it said that through that, Paul felt his love by his voice and by his physical putting his hands on him. And that love communicated to Saul Paul, which I thought was an interesting point too. Ananias knew to do that, to express that love and have God's love radiate through him.
In Thomas's question, where he initially said the courage of Ananias, I initially thought It was just obedience and humility. But then I realized Saul would have traveled with a lot of men. And so he would have been in some kind of place with a lot of men around him. He was like the leader. So Ananias had to go knock on the door of the enemy, so to speak, and ask to come in and see Saul, who could have been in a rage for all he knew. He'd had his sight taken from him, and he had all these soldiers around him. He had to have. They wouldn't have left him alone. He was the leader. And that took a lot of courage, because Ananias could have been, he could have been killed.
Thank
he walked
you.
Right into the enemy camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
One of the things that I thought was a good lesson from this is that we should never fear what men can do to us. We should never fear the human picture, whether it's an enemy, so-called, whether it's a disease, so-called, regardless of what it is, we should never fear it. The only thing that we should ever fear is to disobey God. And when God tells us to do something, we can have full confidence that He will give us the ability to do it. And that is what real courage is. It's not animal courage. There's no human will involved in this. As you explained, it wasn't Ananias' desire to go see this guy. But God told him, God assured him. And that is the courage that we can have.
The more faith we have in God, the less our fear. So that was obvious there. Ananias, he was afraid, but he had faith in God. I bet he was praying the whole way.
Mm-hmm. Darn right.
Yeah, he must have been praying before because he heard the message.
Right.
And he needed enough to prove it.
Yeah, he was receptive. Carrie sent me another beautiful article, Evil Reversed, by Mary Cummins. But anyway, it's just along the lines of what Gary was saying, that these were just a little group of Christians, and here they had, the lead Pharisee, Saul of Tarsus, who was going around killing everybody, coming at them. And it said, it would be difficult to imagine a more unpromising outlook for that little group of disciples. Viewed from a human standpoint, there was not one hopeful thing about this episode, not a single loophole by which they might escape. That they loyally trusted in God to deliver them, we may safely conclude. But that was about the fear of Ananias, but he did it anyway. And it said, how often today we seem to see the same Saul of Tyrus journeying toward us. It may be in the form of a definite ordeal from which we would gladly escape were it possible. Or it may be a vague fear. In our work as Christian Scientists of human law of authority, which is apparently able to take us bound to Jerusalem, let us remember, however, that error never arrives at its destination, no matter how auspiciously it may seem to have started, no matter what the asserted authority behind it. Christ's truth appears to demonstrate God's law of annihilation to all that is unlike love. As we are so often assured in our revered leader's writings, relying wholly upon the Christ as the protector, we shall hear, as undoubtedly those disciples at Damascus, the promise given in the 91st Psalm, it shall not come nigh thy dwelling. Nay, before the threatening of a disaster will prove to be, as in their case, that which ministers unto us spiritually. Really, I hadn't thought of it that way either. When you think of what they were up against, I mean, my goodness, it took some miraculous thing, and certainly the conversion of Saul to Paul was quite miraculous for that to happen, but they all tried, and they all could have been killed. Good lesson.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to mention the farewell discourse. You know, in the Last Supper, one of the major teachings was to love their enemy. They were to love their enemies, love one another, and love their enemies. And somewhere I read that they were praying. They had to have been praying for people like Saul to see the light. So that was also going on, as fearful as things, you know, that was one of the major teachings they had just been taught at the Last Supper, was to love their enemies. So that was also part of why this could happen, because they were praying in obedience to what they had been taught by Jesus.
Thank you. Something like science and health.
I was just going to say, that is why we can't get all wound up, you know, this terrible things or terrible people here, terrible people there. We cannot get wound up in that. Don't listen to that on the news. I don't care who it's talking about. You're seeing an enemy, and you will have that enemy unless you clear your thought of it. You don't take that garbage in. There are these horrible people everywhere. And the Adam dream, yeah, there are, but we know it's a dream. It's not the truth. You can't afford it. I don't care who it's talking about. Don't go there. Love your enemies. Thank you, Karen. The Last Supper.
And it's just like the poem at the beginning, help me, dear God, to live above earth's lies.
Thank you.
I was thinking about there's a line in Science and Health about love for God and man. I'm not sure if I got the quote right. Is the true incentive for healing?
Teaching.
I thought, teaching, yeah. Thank you. And I just thought that kind of fit in there, because they had to really love God and man in order to be able to do some of the things that they did. Not just fear God, but love God and man. So that just came to me while we were talking about this. So.
Well, that's wonderful. So I did want to say, give an example of Ananias' courage elsewhere in the Bible. So if we remember, Moses was at the burning bush, and what was he asked to do? Well, go see the Pharaoh and tell him to free all the Israelites. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But it was mentioned, you know, yes, he was obedient, but it also took courage, as someone else pointed out, right? So it took courage for Moses to go before the Pharaoh. So anyway.
Yeah, that's a good example of not my will, for sure.
And you know, we've been watching here on the movie night that House of David, and the last scene of the first season, the last episode where, yeah, David confronts Goliath, and he admits he's terrified. He said, but he runs to meet him. So again, with God, knowing that God is with you, all things are possible. Thank you, Tom, for that.
Okay,
going
so
back
question,
to what you were just saying, Mary, Mrs. Eddy said that seeing that evil is not personal is more important than seeing that there is no disease, that we just have to see that these evil people are not evil people. They're, evil seems to be attaching itself to them, but it's not personal. Evil is not personal. It's the serpent that whispers in our ear, and we believe that it's our thought or our voice or whatever, and it's not.
No, and that is why Mrs. Ed tells us that it's just as important to handle the belief of personality as to handle the belief of disease.
Thank you. That's really the key to it all, because if you see it as person, you're cooked. But if you see it for what it is, then you can easily defeat it. And it was so great in that depiction in the House of David, when David came to the encampment and he saw all these hundreds or thousands of soldiers all mesmerized by this Goliath going on day after day. And he said, what are you guys doing listening to him? He was clear-sighted. He wasn't mesmerized. And, you know, this is what the pandemic was all about. Mesmerism, hypnotism, droning on and on and on and on about how if you didn't do this or do that, you're going to die, and everybody's dying. And I mean, if you listen to that, it's you come under that mesmerism. Stay clear-headed.
Okay, so
Moving on.
Question number three. Contrast Paul being present at the stoning of Stephen to after his conversion, when Paul was in Jerusalem and they tried to kill him.
I saw the difference there between privilege and hatred versus humility and gratitude in his demeanor.
Well, he was, he was enthusiastic in both cases, wasn't he? He consented to the stoning of Stephen. He was an enthusiastic supporter of what he thought was the right attitude towards the way that Stephen was living and preaching. But he was bothered by what Stephen said, as Mary indicated, because that kind of stuck with him. And then after his conversion, he was just as enthusiastic a supporter of the way. And he, because of his experience as a Pharisee and his training in the law and his camaraderie, if you will, with the rest of the Pharisees, he knew where they were coming from. And he was able to talk to them in a way that would reach them. And he anticipated their resistance because he knew where it was coming from. So he was prepared for their resistance. He was prepared for them trying to kill him as they killed others. Mm-hmm. And he was just as enthusiastic when he was confronted. But he also was humble enough to escape, when his life was actually in danger.
Yeah, the fierce warrior piled in a little basket being pulled down over a wall.
Yeah. Humility. Yeah, the movie on time shows that it's interesting. I guess he's let down in the basket and then he gets on a horse.
I thought one of the wonderful lessons in this whole story is that you don't let your past define you. Do not let your past define you. All your mistakes, your regrets, whatever. If you bring that into your present, then you're cooked. You can't do that. And Paul certainly did not. And in fact, that's what he showed, his true repentance, right? We're told you feel sorry for what you did, then you truly repent and change. And he repented and changed. And the work that he did in the years that was left to him to do that work was amazing.
Yeah, to be able to let go of that identity as killer of Christians, to the point where he wasn't even guilty about it afterwards. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why he had the humility to allow his name to be changed. That took a lot of humility, and it represented what Mary just described. He wasn't going to let his past define him.
Yeah. First he was a believer, then he was persecuted. And in that article by Spurgeon, Stephen and Saul, he says, "Oh yes, it is good for you to remember what you used to be, for you will have hope for other people when you remember that." And then I'm sure he remembered, and it probably haunted him at times, but he didn't let it limit his what he was doing or deter him in any way. And then also from Spurgeon, "Out of many an evil thing, God has often brought great good, as he did in this case, both through the prayer and through the preaching of Holy Stephen." Mm-hmm. So that seemed like such a horrible thing. Look at the good that came of it.
Yeah. You know, how many times have we had Romans 8, verse 1 in our lesson? There's no condemnation to those that are in Jesus.
And thank you.
All idea that Paul could write that.
Yes.
And obviously heartfelt.
Yes.
Because I think we've all heard from our time, people have read that verse and it has opened up something good for them. It has helped them release whatever it is in their past that needs to be released, to know that there is no condemnation if you are in Christ Jesus. Mm-hmm. So that's
and I know Paul was mentioned, well, in the book by Henry Drummond that we've talked about before, as writing the Corinthians phrases regarding love. And it said in that book how, you know, here was a man whose hands were stained with blood, and now he's writing this. And it's just so wonderful. It just all points to God and the power and the majesty of God. It's just awesome.
Well, that's a good point, because Paul wasn't a very loving guy before, right? Or Saul, you know, to persecute Christians and condone the killing, stoning of Stephen. That wasn't love. He had to learn love. And it took him a while, but he did learn it.
That's why it's so important that the Bible be seen not as just a history book, that there are so many lessons here. And if we dig deep and get the spiritual, and this is it, Mrs. Eddy says, you know, if you only read the Bible like a history book, you might as well be reading a book about America. But if you look at deeply what the lessons are and what it's teaching us, it has so much, it's just really these lessons, this even just today, all the lessons we've been bringing out about this one big event. But I mean, there's just so much there to learn from, but to skim over it, it's just some story. it's really just a lot to learn. It's incredible.
The spiritual interpretation of the scriptures, because I've heard it recently where, you know, who wants to read the Bible? It's horrible stories, everybody getting killed and the wrath of God. I mean, yeah, if you read it like that, it is pretty horrible. But lessons, it's a book of life. It's the most important book there ever is. And what it...
That's why it's called the Bible.
You know, the Bible. And a Bible reading nation can never be enslaved or something.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Because John Adams had said that a Bible reading people cannot be governed wrongly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think what is interesting to me is it's kind of a commentary on intellectualism. You know, Paul, or actually Saul at that time, you know, he was trained by Gamaliel. I mean, he was highly educated. You know, well-trained and everything. So from an intellectual point of view, I mean, he was probably superior to most people, right? So therefore, he knew what was right,
yes.
Obviously.
And what is your story about the hypnotist, Jeremy?
Oh, yeah. When I was in high school, I was taking a psychology class, and they had a hypnotist come in. And he started talking about how only intelligent people can be hypnotized. And it was really funny to see all the kids, like, they just couldn't wait to show how intelligent they were by being hypnotized.
Well, and we have learned that, too, because if you believe in a belief of a superior brain, right? Well, there you go. You're hypnotized because you just... we have the mind of Christ, and it's been told that a working Christian Scientist, it's impossible to hypnotize. That's why in the Communist Manifesto, they want to get rid of the CS Church. So a working Christian Scientist, if you're not working, you can be easily hypnotized. So that's why we have to stay awake and alert, which is why we do all this every week.
So that's kind of a good segue into the last question, right, Tom?
Is there anything more?
Okay, right. So question number four, and I do want to say I feel like this is the most important question in the entire Bible study, and we could have done the entire Bible study just on this question. So what does Paul's conversion tell us about how God can impact our lives and the community we live in? So I'm going to read this here. So this is the reference, okay? Then had the churches rest throughout all Judea and Galilee and Samaria, and were edified and walking in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of the Holy Ghost, were multiplied.
In spite of all the persecution that continued, people stood up against it. They were strengthened by God in their understanding of what they knew about the truth. And they attracted other people who saw that it was the truth and wanted it for their lives. It was progress for mankind. And the old established false beliefs about who and what mankind is, about who and what God is, while they resist and they attack the better idea, they can't overthrow it because God is behind progress.
Thank you. And I hadn't thought of this until right now. You know, when we were excommunicated and all of that, it took a person, a courageous person like Mrs. Evans, to say, no, we're not going down under this. Because we could have easily, a lot of people would have, okay, well, that's that.
Yeah, we'll just
fold. A lot of people did.
A lot of people did.
And yeah. A lot of people did.
Yeah, they just folded up their tent and went underground.
She said, the hell you say? And she fought back. And we won. And as far as I know, we're the only ones who have ever stood before the organization, their lawyers, their rah, rah, rah things, and have won and defeated at Goliath, in a sense. And that, and at first, we, you know, they maligned us. They did all this. They did everything to us to put us out, to snuff us out. We just kept going with the little bit we had.
And they still are.
Yeah.
And they still are. And in spite of that,
yeah,
we are edified. We are strengthened. We are growing because it's God doing it.
Thank you. Because nothing but God could do this. Nothing.
Yeah.
And anyone who's lost sight of that ends up leaving the church in some way, because that's the main thing. It's God doing it. Yeah. Always.
I'd like to just add something to that. About 5 months ago, I ran into a very prominent teacher here in Georgia, and she asked me what church I was attending, and I mentioned Plainfield, and she and her husband kind of looked like deer in headlights, but I continued on to tell them that we had 18 websites, we had members from all over the world, that someone had recently visited us from Australia, and all they could say was, oh, that's great. That's great. I was so grateful for that opportunity to mention Plainfield, because about 4 months before that, I went to this church here in Georgia. And I was looking for her because I knew her from the past. I couldn't find her. Couldn't find her. She was here. No, she was there. And every place I went, she wasn't. And then those months later, it was like I was supposed to meet her and talk to her and let her know how wonderful Plainfield is doing and how prosperous it was. I was really grateful for that. I really felt like that was God, and I do think so. I just wanted to share that.
Well, thank you. That's a good example. And I do hear that, you know, when people say I go to the Plainfield Church or something, you know, the looks they get on their faces. I mean, even that woman who'd gone to the Longyear Museum. I mean, there's dead silence. Or so it goes on. You'd think after all these years it would be over, but And anybody who has any problem, look at our website. Come visit us. We have nothing to hide. Ask me any question, I'll answer it. So
we so much have nothing to hide that we give everything away for free.
We give it free. Put it all out there.
Yeah.
So thank you, Janet. And I appreciate, you know, when people do speak up, if put in that situation.
Well, and, you know, this is how God works. He will place us where we can do the most good. And, you know, if there's opposition, you know, he'll help us meet that opposition because, you know, truth prospers, error does not. Error cannot forever mesmerize a whole bunch of people. It just can't happen. Or, you know, he will move us to some place where there is receptivity. He will always, supply and demand always come together for progress.
And that quote that you read from that Evil Reverse by Mary Cummins, that where she said, evil never arrives at its destination. I just love that.
Yeah.
Feels like a good calendar quote.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Another one is that when God is talking to Ananias and said, you will go because he is my vessel. I love that vessel.
Well, and God gave him very specific instructions,
he did,
too.
Yes.
He told him what street to go to. He told him what house to go to. He told him, you know, he didn't say just wander around and wait for some guy to come to you. Go to this place and you'll find him. And, you know, so that helped Ananias, you know, have the courage. Because he was going to.
I guess we have to.
Place.
Yeah, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's I guess we have to see everybody as having potential to being a vessel, no matter what is put in front of us. We have to see everybody that way, that there is potential there. There is receptivity. And then let God do the work.
That is love.
We are all, everyone is worthy of his grace. No question about that. But God knows the heart. So nobody can mock him either. So he knows who he chooses to do what. That's all.
And Mrs. Eddy said herself, she never knew who was going to turn out to be a good worker or not. And I've certainly found that even in the practice. Mm-hmm. Some who come and go, some who seem all excited at first, but then fizzle out. Some who seem very not so sure at first, but end up becoming really good workers. You never know, but God knows. And God
Well, I wanted to say that one of the things this tells me, like we learned from Ananias about having courage, if the previous question, you know, like once Saul converted to Paul, then of course they tried to kill Paul, and so things are pretty miserable, right? And then here we see that there's peace throughout the land, so. What's that quality we need to have is patience.
Thank you.
Well, and it was human peace. So in other words, they were still being persecuted. They were still being attacked. But they had peace of mind that they never, ever had before. And they were attracting a lot of people to what they're doing. Remember that for the first 200 or 300 years of the early Christian churches, people came to church and were healed in the services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They couldn't doubt the power of God when they went to the church. And it was only when church became a political organization, and Rome, you know, kind of took it over, that the healing aspect was lost. But they had peace of mind.
Yeah, that's true. They were persecuted. I don't know if the persecution ever stops.
It hasn't stopped today. It
hasn't stopped even today.
Well,
peace of mind if you're doing the right thing. peace that passeth all understanding.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful Bible study.
Yeah, thank you
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.